Welcome to the Living Out Podcast, helping people, churches, and society talk about faith and sexuality.
Hello, lovely listeners. I'm Ashley, and I'm joined today by Andy and Ed. Hello, both.
Hello, Ashley.
Hello.
So this is our series for church leaders, where we're aiming to equip you as church leaders as you navigate conversations about sexuality in your churches. But most of what we're covering in this series will be useful to people who maybe aren't church leaders, but are still part of a church. And that's definitely going to be true, I think, of our topic today on how we handle disagreement within our churches on the subject of sexuality. Before we dive into that, I wanted to ask about a different kind of disagreement. The biggest board game related disagreement that you have had. Tell us your stories.
Well, I can remember one holiday, a very wet holiday when we were all, actually probably pre-teenagers, me and my siblings, and for some reason we responded to the weather by playing Monopoly every single day of a holiday. I think there wasn't a day when somebody didn't leave the board in tears, and I think there was at least one day when somebody tipped over the board in anger. And I'd love to pretend this sort of thing's in the past, but I was recently playing The Game of Life, that fantastic 80s game, with my nephew and nieces. And you have to go and you get to a certain point, you have to get married. And I decided this was the point to educate nephew and nieces on the fact you don't have to get married. And yet they then pointed out that throughout the rest of the game, I was also wanting to get the money you got for being married, which was true. So we did have a little bit. They did accuse me of hypocrisy, and they were probably right.
Wow.
My story was also when I was a teenager. Trivial Pursuit, which people were mad about, sort of going back to the 1990s. And I got asked this question. What's the traditional date for racehorses to celebrate their birthday? Which I didn't know the answer to. And so just randomly guessed a date in the middle of April, totally inadvertently landing on my grandmother's birthday, who was sitting right next to me, who basically accused me of thinking she was a horse. And it just sort of descended into mild chaos. So, I mean, there was a sort of 364-1 against me inadvertently landing on my grandmother's birthday. But yeah, that was a memorable moment.
Oops.
What about you, Ashley?
Mine is less a particular story and more a general state of being that I seem to enter into when I play board games. I like to think that in most areas of my life, Christ is refining and transforming me, but I don't think he's gotten to this one yet. I think there are a couple of friends in particular I play a lot of games with, and one of them, we get on very well, but the moment we're sat opposite each other with a game board between us, it's fairly feral. I'm not sure anything that we say to each other in that setting should be repeated, so maybe I'll stop there.
We're intrigued.
So at Living Out, we tend to get two types of invitation for a speaking event. The first one will be from a church where pretty much everybody's on the same page when it comes to sexuality and sexual ethics, and they just need some wisdom on pastoral care and engaging with culture and things like that. But then the second type of invitation will often come from a church leader who'll say something like, "Oh, I believe the same thing that you guys do, but I'm not sure that everybody in the church will agree with me. I'm not even sure my fellow leaders will agree with me, and I'm not sure what to do." And it's that kind of person that we're trying to help in this episode. So I think the first question that we need to tackle really is, can't we just agree to disagree? Obviously, this is so contentious, or can be so contentious, in the church. Wouldn't it actually promote unity if we just kind of let it lie and focused on other things? Ed, what do you have to say for us on that one?
Well, we were joking earlier that I did recently make a general synod speech on this one, but I'm not going to go for that. I think there's sort of three particular things I'd say is that, I mean, and the first would be, practically, I don't think you can agree to disagree. So if you've got someone like me in your church family who's gay, same-sex attracted, and thinks that as a result of that, I should remain single for life, that'd be wrong for me to get married to a man and have sex, you can't fully support me and also, next Saturday, marry another gay man in the church to his gay partner and fully support him. That's just practically not possible. Both of us are going to feel supported or unsupported by whatever line you take. And if you do both of us are going to be quite hurt and injured by you you know, one Saturday leading a service for two men to get married, and then sort of trying also then to pretend you're really fully, fully supportive of me as well. So practically it doesn't work. Historically, it's never been one of the issues or one of the areas of disagreement that churches have ever said, oh, we can agree to disagree on this one. So my church, we agree to disagree on baptism. That has been something that a number of churches throughout history have agreed to disagree on. This one, status of marriage, definition of marriage and where sex happens for Christians, it's not something historically that Christians have agreed to disagree. And then, of course, biblically, there are things that the New Testament would seem to suggest there can be a level of agreement to disagree. People often quote Romans 14 and discussions around the Sabbath and food sacrificed to idols. But when it comes to sexual ethics, the Bible passages that deal with that, the New Testament passages in particular, wouldn't seem to allow sexual ethics to be something that you could agree to disagree on. So 1 Corinthians 5, you're actually told, the Christians there are told to distance themselves from somebody that's departed from biblical sexual ethics. Or in Acts 15, when there has been a disagreement in the early church, one of the things the apostles say in their letter to Gentile Christians is that you're not permitted to disagree when it comes to sexual ethics, Christian sexual ethics. And so we've got to be very careful in putting this in that category when, if we had a New Testament apostle with us, he would say this is something you can't agree to disagree on.
Really helpful. Thank you, Ed. We do have a bunch of resources if you'd like to think about this more. So there's an article by Sam Albury called Why Can't Christians Agree to Differ? Or there's a podcast episode from our Explore Questions series called How Important Is All This? Where we go into all of that in more depth. And there'll be links to both of those in the show notes. But for now, we've established that we do need to talk about this. We can't just agree to disagree. We need to help people navigate our disagreements. And we'll come to some practicalities on how we can do that later in this episode. But before that, let's talk about the kind of principles that we need to bear in mind. Any ideas?
I think you need that clarity and gentleness. So in the first episode in this series, Andrew and Ed were talking about just clarity, that you need to talk about this. The temptation will be, because there's disagreement, that you're going to hope that it goes away and that you don't have to deal with it. That's actually not great for people within your church who experience same-sex attraction. It's also not great for a generation who will essentially get their morality from the culture. So be clear, this will be costly. There may well be painful conversations, but you do need to do it, because otherwise the church will drift. People won't get the support that they need, so you do need to do it. But you also need to be gentle as you do it. So often the emotions will be going, you'll feel tense, and so that will mean you will often react in quick ways. Really struck by what Paul says in 2 Timothy when he's trying to help Timothy to deal with those who are pursuing a different doctrine. And he says, those who oppose you, you must gently instruct. And so at the level of thinking through what is my approach, I want to be clear, but my tone as I do it will be gentle. It will be patient. I'll take time. I'll listen. I won't be angry in the tone of voice I use, and so on. So that's just two words I think can be helpful: clarity and gentleness.
And then I think one of the things we need to do when it comes to disagreement in the church is just recognize that disagreement and conflict is, I don't know, it never feels like this, but it's actually one of God's gifts to the church. We know that throughout church history, times of disagreement and conflict have been the way that God has clarified our thinking and our behavior in ways that they needed clarifying, in ways they needed changing. So, you know, there were centuries of conflict around the Trinity, the doctrine of the Trinity, and God used that to wonderfully gift his church with really helpful definitions of what the Trinity is and isn't, how the members of the Trinity interact with each other. And that came out of conflict and disagreement. And often we think, oh my goodness, conflict and disagreement, we just can't have it here, when actually So many of the good things we enjoy, the creeds, for instance, come out of a lot of conflict and disagreement. And so often areas of strength in churches' life have become areas of strength because there's had to be a lot of conversation. There's had to be a lot of honest and open disagreement to get us to that point. So part of what I want to say is don't necessarily think that disagreement will weaken your church. It can do if it's done badly. If, for instance, you ignore some of the points that Andrew's just made, but actually it can strengthen your church and it can be something that God uses to help your church to be clearer on the gospel and more compassionate at applying the gospel into the lives of people like us. And then just on principles, I can't believe I'm doing this at one level because we don't often recommend resources that the Church of England produce. But I would encourage people to look at the pastoral principles that the Church of England sort of developed, which I actually helped the Church of England develop as part of the pastoral advisory group. And there's just, if you just put the pastoral principles, Church of England, into Google, you'd find them. And they're just six things that it's worth being aware of when you go into any discussion about anything that's controversial in your church's life. And I would recommend looking at those and perhaps sharing those with those you're having these conversations with, because they protect us from some of the traps we can fall into. So, one of them is paying attention to power. And I do think particularly those of us in church leadership need to be aware of the power dynamics that will be in a room when you discuss these things, how people might feel that they can't disagree with you, or how there are perhaps particularly powerful and angry people in the room when you discuss these that other people feel that they can't push back against. And just acknowledging the power dynamics that are in the room and thinking about how you can better handle those would be a good thing to do. And something else would just be, one of the other pastoral principles is just that of casting out fear. I think so many conversations around difficult things are best started by just sitting down and saying, should we just name our fears and get everybody to name their fears in the room? Because that then just helps you then to understand why people are saying certain things as the conversation continues. And then just addressing ignorance. I think so often people are really ignorant of the best case arguments on both sides, and people are ignorant of what it's like to be a gay man or woman in the church today. People are ignorant about just so much, and actually just addressing ignorance and helping people to genuinely understand, particularly to genuinely understand the different perspectives and experiences and sides, if I can put it like this, in this argument, is going to be really helpful.
Seems to me that as well, you need to tackle questions surrounding sexuality rather than just sexuality itself. So the view that we would hold on sexuality has its roots in a whole heap of other things. So it has its roots in God as creator and human beings as fallen. You know, so God is the one who's given us the best pattern for life as creator. All of us will experience stuff that is taking us away from pleasing him because we're all fallen. The authority of the Bible, the way in which Jesus in Matthew 19, as he talks about marriage, will in passing describe the Bible as that which God has said. And then other stuff as well, the fact that we want to go towards a culture that is wandering away from biblical sexual ethics. The fact that we want to create a church that is family so that those who are pleasing the Lord in this area won't just be miserable and lonely and single, but will be wrapped up into church family. All the kind of stuff we do as a Living Out team when we do events, you actually need to put those foundations in place as well so that what you say about sexuality makes sense. I think the reason some people will want to wander away and disagree with you on biblical sexuality is because they kind of perceive it is either obnoxious or just leaves people miserable. And I think you've got to put the surrounding stuff in place so that it becomes coherent or indeed plausible.
And then also you need to be realistic that not everybody in your church is going to agree. Church leadership teams need to be united on something as important as this. We can't agree to disagree, but you don't need to insist that every single member of your church agree on this, there will be people in your church that don't. And it's worth recognizing that some of them will be willing to be part of a church which they personally disagree with, but that also some of them might leave. And this is an issue that is dividing churches, that is separating Christians for, if I can put it like this, for good reasons, because it is a really important issue. It is something we can't agree to disagree on. And therefore, if some people do walk away from your church, that is obviously incredibly sad and painful for them and for you. But I'm afraid it probably just is an inevitability of the level of importance that this issue has.
I think that's right, because I would end up leaving a church that blessed same-sex marriage. You know, I would have to. And so it's probably no surprise that people at the other end of the debate will find they need to leave a church that is arguing for sex being for the marriage of a man and a woman. So don't be surprised by that. The alternative is worse. The alternative is just this eating away and sort of it's in the background and we can't really talk about it. Over the long term, that's a worse option than some people realizing they can't stay in the church.
Fantastic. Thank you both so much. Rich wisdom there and some really helpful advice on the principles that we need to bear in mind as we're having these conversations and handling our disagreements. After the break, we will ground it a bit more and talk about some of the practicalities of how we have these conversations.
If this series has provoked questions, there's an opportunity to ask them at our Living Out Church Leaders webinar on Thursday, the 13th of June, from 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock. Come along and ask any question that you've got, and several Living Out team members will attempt to answer them. Sign up on the Living Out events page on our website, livingout.org.
Okay, so we've talked about some principles to bear in mind as we're handling disagreement in our churches when it comes to sexuality. Let's turn to some of the practicalities then, and let's start with our fellow leaders. As we mentioned before the break, you kind of need to be united on this as a leadership team, but that might not be something that is automatically immediately in place. And so what kind of practicalities would you guys suggest when it comes to talking with your fellow leaders about this?
One option would be to read stuff together. I think Preston Sprinkle's material is superb. So his People to Be Loved, I think, is a great starting point and is accessible, certainly at the level of leaders. Its pastoral tone is like nothing else I've read. He's engaging with those who are gay, same-sex attracted, wrestling with then what it means to be biblical, again, the most balanced description of what the Bible says. So that might be a starting point. Why don't we read this together? And that will give us the place to start a discussion.
Well, and I mean, just another more recent Preston Sprinkle book, which probably makes a really nice pair with that, is his Does the Bible Support Same-Sex Marriage? 21 Conversations from a Historically Christian View. And again, if you're, you know, so I think the book that Andy talked about is in some ways the more pastoral, and this is the more just getting into the text. And, you know, and it's Preston Sprinkle with all the benefits that Andy just talked about, but particularly focused on the Bible.
The conversation I often try and encourage churches to have where there's a sort of degree of division on this is to say, look, we want to be like Jesus, but let's assume that's quite a good starting point for a church leadership team. We want to be like Jesus. And so it seems as you look in the Gospels, you have two things going on. You do have Jesus' clarity on sexual ethics, and you have the fact that he is going constantly towards those who aren't living up with those sexual ethics. And so again, possibly trying to use those two poles as a sort of way of starting the discussion. Are we agreed here? If so, what does it mean to live those two things out? Might just be a useful starting point for conversation amongst leadership teams.
And then I think on leadership teams, sometimes, particularly in evangelical churches, it just might be worth just scoping the sort of different sorts of disagreements. I think we've already touched on this. So there'll be some people that disagree on whether same-sex sexual relationships are right and wrong. That might be the disagreement. But actually, the other more subtle disagreement that I've often found in evangelical churches is not actually about that, but on whether this is an issue that we can agree to disagree over. So I was talking to a friend recently who's a church pastor, and his leadership team all think personally that same-sex sexual relationships are not supported by the Bible, are not supported by Jesus. But not everybody agrees that it's a really important issue. And actually, that's been a more sort of subtle form of disagreement that he's had to talk through, or that he's having to talk through. And that's why some of the, you know, the answer to the question that Ashley posed earlier on, that might be somewhere you need to go. But actually scoping out, what is the disagreement? Is it about biblical sexual ethics, or is it about what Christians can afford to disagree on, what churches can allow disagreement on amongst their leadership team? You might just actually scoping the debate, trying to work out exactly what you need to be talking about, might be really helpful. Because, for instance, in the Church of England, as a denomination, we're very clearly divided on the ethics around sexual ethics. And that's, in some ways, been acknowledged. What we don't seem to be able to acknowledge, and what seems to be getting us spinning around in circles, is disagreement over whether it really matters or not. And that's not being acknowledged. And as a result, we're going around in circles. So scoping out the nature of the disagreement is going to be really important with your fellow leaders.
I mean, just a sort of pastoral reflection as well. The most painful thing that I think a church leader goes through is division within a leadership team. I remember, when I was a pastor on different issues, actually, in a sense, when the leadership team was united, there was a sense of, okay, this is hard, but I know how to handle it. It was actually times when we disagreed that was the most painful. So if you're in the midst of this and finding it hard, part of me would just want to say pastorally, I can understand why you're finding it hard, at which point it is pouring out your heart to the Lord, talking to friends outside your church context, frankly, just enduring, persevering, which is praised in Scripture. And so if it's a disagreement within the leadership team, I think hopefully we've given wise way forwards, but just to say it is hard, and you're going to need the Lord's help in the midst of it, and you're going to need to cry out to Him.
And it's worth acknowledging, isn't it, that one of the reasons it's going to be difficult is that it might involve some well-established leaders stepping back from leadership, or it might involve you as a leader having to resign from leadership yourself. And that is one of the fears, isn't it, in the room, that, again, just going back to some of what I said earlier, is worth acknowledging that is one of the fears. People fear losing a role in church. People fear losing a job, their home, their ministry around this, and just recognizing that and praying into that. And again, getting that out on the table, I think, can be quite helpful. Because sometimes you can be having this really charged conversation and people aren't quite aware that one of the reasons it's so charged is because you fear losing your job, or because actually there's an elder, a fellow leader, who's got a child, he's just come out as gay and is getting married to their girlfriend. Getting some of that out on the table is really helpful, because so often we can have disagreements where we're perhaps not being open and honest about the fears that we have, the personal dynamics that we bring to a discussion.
Fantastic. Thanks, guys. So let's think about the wider church then. So we've had the conversations as a leadership team. We've navigated some of that really difficult terrain together. And hopefully we're in a place where we have found a position of unity as a team. What about when it comes to talking to the wider church? Perhaps let's start with the idea of a listen to both sides sort of event, where you get in different speakers to explain different positions to the wider church. Do you think there's any wisdom in that kind of event?
I mean, I've been involved in a number of them over the years, often where, I don't know, I've been asked to speak, and then sort of 3 weeks earlier, they had somebody who would be pro same-sex marriage within the church speaking. I think they're always really difficult, and I don't actually see a huge amount of benefit to them, because the two outcomes are likely to be the disagreements will stay in place. To be honest, I've not really noticed when events like that happen that anybody is massively convinced by the side different to the one they started the conversation with. And of course, then the outcome is, oh, well, we've heard sort of two things that from people who seem really nice and happy and smiley, so let's just agree to disagree, shall we? And pretty much every process that I've been involved in where there's been let's listen to both sides, the outcome has been, well, we just need to agree to disagree then, which, if I'm honest, for the reasons Ed mentioned earlier, I don't think is sustainable. And so I've not seen let's get both sides in ever, frankly, to be a useful way forward for a local church.
I guess one of the factors that comes into all of this is how your church makes decisions about these things. So if you are in a church which you are going to be doing a congregational wide vote on something, you probably do need to inform people because they are, you know, the whole church family is making the decision or members of your church are making the decision. But if your form of church government is different, you don't necessarily need to. So I'm part of the Anglican Church, and for instance, over the prayers of love and faith that are being introduced at the moment, the decision makers are the incumbent, the vicar, the minister, and the PCC, the church council. They're the people that get to make the decisions around this. They need to have a well-informed debate, but you don't need to necessarily roll all that out, because one of the reasons you have leaders in some forms is to actually take those decisions away as an act of kindness from the whole church family and put them on a group of elders, a leadership team, a church council, and things like that. And then if you are the leader of the church or the leaders of the church within those structures, I think people are looking for you to lead and not to say, oh, we found this really difficult. What do you think of these two options? Actually, that can often, in a lot of systems of church government, be actually you unhelpfully escaping your responsibility, or trying to escape your responsibility to give a clear, gospel-hearted, biblically faithful lead. And sometimes when we do there's these two sides, why don't we take a vote? You're basically absolving the God-given role you've been given as a leader in your local church under the system of government that it's set up.
Yeah, I think that affects the language that we use as well. So often I'll be in a church and the leader will say something like, well, what Andy's going to say is just part of our journey and the start of our conversation and so on. And I always found that mildly frustrating in that it's sort of giving the impression that, you know, the outcome isn't decided yet. Whereas actually, in that case, I know the leaders are orthodox on sexuality. I know that's where they think the church should land. And so part of me would say, don't suggest this is a kind of conversation or journey where the outcome is up for grabs. Having said that, the way we will talk about it means there are lots of conversations we do want to have. So in a sense, we're not having a conversation around whether we're going to land on marriage being male, female, or could be same sex. So that's not ultimately the final conversation which we're still discussing. But of course, we want to have conversations with those for whom this is hard because of personal stories, family issues, wondering how that applies to them as a teacher and so on. So I'd encourage, as leaders engage churches, just to be clear on what is and isn't happening, not to say this is a journey where we kind of will ultimately decide an outcome, but to say this is where we're going, but as a result of it, we want a whole heap of conversations about pastoral and practical consequences that come from it.
And it also doesn't mean that you're not helping people to see and appreciate and understand the arguments that are different to yours, the perspectives that are different to yours. So, you know, for instance, if I'm teaching on the deity of Christ, I'm not going to say, well, let's have a debate. I'm going to say that Jesus was God, and we're going to have somebody from the local Unitarian Church. He's going to say that Jesus wasn't God, and we're just going to sort of see, you know, we're on a journey on the, you know, that. I'm not going to do that, but I am going to help. If I'm a responsible leader, teacher, pastor of church, I am going to help my church family think through the pushbacks they've been against Jesus being understood to be and believed to be God, because that's going to help them in their evangelism. Because it's really important that they realize that these things have been talked about before, and some really helpful summaries of Christian belief have been come up with by the church, or have been understood by the church in ways that can really help us today. And that it's really important that people understand why some people have struggled with the deity of Christ. So, you know, all those sort of things. It's not just sort of, this is what we now believe, shut up. It's, this is what we now believe, this is why, these are ways in which people have disagreed in the past, which actually I think often will strengthen the case you're trying to make rather than undermine it.
I agree with that. In many ways, I've been really helped speaking on sexuality by thinking through the main pushbacks. So for instance, the fact that Jesus is so inclusive of everybody, I've just found really useful to reflect on, and that's fundamentally changed the language that I use. So I want consciously to talk about the gospel being for all people, including those who are sexual minorities. The language I will now use a lot as I speak on sexuality is, Jesus is wonderfully, gloriously inclusive. Anybody from whatever background who wants to live with him as Lord is welcome. And so, in a sense, that's consciously thinking through, you know, those who would take a different view on me of this have used inclusion language extensively. And in some ways, they're right. And so we need to think through, how do we use that language and use it in a way that is biblical?
And then also, just, I wonder whether one of the most helpful things, we perhaps should have said this earlier, is just making sure that there seems to be a point to the conversation and that you're aiming with some practical stuff. So, you know, you might be having a conversation in which you're, in a Church of England context, making decisions about whether you're going to use these prayers of love and faith, or you might actually be better, I think, would be to say, look, what we are wanting to be a church that is biblically inclusive. We're wanting to be a church which speaks the truth in love, that blends grace and truth as Jesus is when it comes to these experiences and questions around sexuality, marriage, gender. So actually giving people a positive, we're not just having a big argument, we're having a discussion because we believe what Jesus believes about sex and marriage, but we're also wanting to include and draw people to the gospel in the same way that Jesus did. And actually sometimes having a practical purpose and saying, look, this is where we're heading to, and helping people see that it's not just a sort of a purity thing. We want to be a pure church. That's what this is all about. But no, we want to be a church that combines grace and truth. And the purpose of this discussion is to be a church that better welcomes all and that better articulates what we often call the better story of Jesus, that Jesus offers when it comes to sexuality, gender, relationships.
Fantastic. That feels like a great note to end on, since we're out of time as well. That's convenient. Thank you both so much for all of your wisdom and thoughts there. Hopefully there's tons for people to be chewing over, thinking on, and that will be helpful to them. You'll find all the resources that we've mentioned in this episode in the show notes, so do check that out. And just have a look at the Living Out website generally. There's loads and loads of things on there. If you need some resources that just help people to see that it's possible to be biblically orthodox and still pastorally loving, there's loads of things on the Living Out site that might help you. The story videos and the rest of our podcasts would be a good place for you to start. Thank you for listening to this episode. Do subscribe, share, rate if you've enjoyed it. And we look forward to you joining us for our next episode, which will be about church membership and discipline. Bye for now.